There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back, listeners of the 45th podcast. I am happy to be back this week. It's just me and Susan this week. How are you doing, Susan?
I'm good. How are you doing, Rabia?
I'm good, but things are a little hairy, and I want to thank you for taking the lead today on the episode. I've been frantically telling Susan for the last couple of days that I am slammed. I know there's a lot of stuff happening, but it's been hard to keep up with all the news reporting, although there are a few stories that have caught my eye this week, and Susan, you want to start off? Or
yeah, although there's one thing we agree that we'll probably address more next week, and that's the current situation developing in the sports ball world.
Sports ball, yes. We did discuss sports ball, which is my favorite sport, by the way.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I know there's been some name calling, and it's kind of escalating, and some rescinding of invitations to the White House, but it is developing. And so we're just going to let that sit and get back to it next week. There's plenty to talk about there, but let's talk about some of the stuff.
I wanted to hear you say son of a bitch, Rabia.
Son of a bitch.
There we go.
I have no problem saying that. but I'm not referring to, Kaepernick. Anyway, I wanted to start off with this. This story happened, I think, earlier in this past news week, and I was like, what the heck? It was crazy. But then I thought, maybe it's a setup. And that was...
Yes.
The New York Times report of a really odd conversation that happened within earshot of kind of anybody who was around, and that was a conversation between Trump lawyers having a lunch, at BLT Steak, which is a downtown DC restaurant. Do you remember that?
Yes, the one that happens to be next to the New York Times DC bureau.
Yeah. And Ken Vogel, who is a reporter of the New York Times, was right there.
Yeah. So basically, these two attorneys, they have a duty of confidentiality to their client. These two attorneys are going to a restaurant that's right next to the New York Times building and loudly saying, I hope no one checks those secret documents that White House lawyer McGahn has in that safe.
What the heck? Okay. You know they know better. We know they
do.
Know
they do. They're not the greatest attorneys by any measure, but they know better than that. That was until... I refuse to believe it was an accident. They knew what they were doing. It's not a coincidence they were at that restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, they were sitting outside, close to others, talking loudly. They meant to be heard. They couldn't leak. I mean, this was a leak, so they couldn't do that. They did it anyway. But it was...
They couldn't do like a direct leak, like, hey, I'm calling up a reporter and saying, hey, I got a scoop for you. But this was the way to do it. So why do you think that's happening? They're trying to direct Mueller's attention to something. No,
well, I think they're battling him again. And so there appears clearly to be a split between legal strategies here. On one hand, there's McGahn, who's like the White House attorney. And then there's Trump's personal lawyers, like Mr. Mustache and the guy on CNN all the time, who are baffling choices for attorneys in a serious criminal federal matter like this. But it appears like these guys, the new guys, the personal ones, are embracing a more open strategy. They want to give documents over. They want to be more forthright with Mueller's investigation. Whereas McGahn seems to think that there could be some trouble here and does not want to be open.
Mm. These attorneys, one was Ty Cobb. Do you know who the other one was?
Sekulow.
Okay. Oh, it was Sekulow. Okay. Yeah, they know what they were doing. That's interesting. Then you have another attorney, Michael Cohen, and apparently he was supposed to have a meeting with the Senate this week, and the Senate canceled that meeting. And do you know what Cohen's role is? Is he like a private attorney? Is he a White House? He's not White House counsel.
Cohen is Trump organization. He's been their counsel Trump for a very long time. And he is in the thick of whatever's going on. Yeah. He's friends with Felix Sater. He was the one who was part of that effort to bring the Ukrainian peace plan over to Flynn. Remember that story from February?
Yep.
And Cohen is allegedly, according to the Steele dossier, the one who was attending that meeting in Europe in about August, September, October, in order to coordinate with the email hacking.
In Prague, right?
Prague or somewhere around there.
Yep. Apparently he was supposed to come meet the folks at the Senate Intelligence Committee, and they just kind of canceled the meeting, which is odd. I don't know why they would just cancel it, but maybe there was some agreement that if he couldn't speak to the media, and he kind of violated that agreement. And so I guess they're signaling that, hey, we're not friends anymore. So that doesn't mean they can't subpoena him.
Oh, or it could be Mueller. They could be not wanting to interfere there. If there's something going on, I mean, I'm sure Cohen is the center of Mueller, what he's looking into. Because Cohen's everywhere.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, like, it's not common that you have so much spotlight on attorneys, like all the attorneys on like an issue like this, or really in any case at all.
It's MAGA, making attorneys get attorneys.
That's great. Susan, you and I need to be hired by some of these attorneys. We just do much better by just saying, stop talking in public.
Yeah, like the guys he's hiring. So people like Manafort, he's currently having his own attorney issues. There's lots of turnover there and problems going on. And he's actually getting his own attorneys in trouble as well. But he's hiring the right guys, the guys you want to hire for this kind of work. I still don't know what the hell Trump is thinking, but the answer is he's probably not.
He's not. Trump has, I think, judgment issues. But I think what it is for him is like, if he just feels like he connects with somebody, that's all the qualifications he needs.
Yeah. Good to go.
Yeah. Good to go. All right. So let's move on.
So turning back to, what are we calling it now? The new healthcare plan. I mean, there's Graham Cassidy, but is there like a catchy name for it?
That's the only one that's the only one I've heard of.
It's not Trump Care. It's Graham Cassidy. I mean, yeah. If you want to put your names in this dumpster fire, go ahead, boys.
Yeah. But it sounds like at least like a serious name, you know?
Yeah. But it's back, only it's not really back. And well, we're still in limbo. I don't want to make any predictions yet because although McCain finally, again, like ripped that football away at the last minute and said he's not going to vote for it, they could theoretically turn Murkowski most likely. They're not going to turn Collins. Or Paul could be just lying the whole time and be happy to vote for it, despite his voice denials. And then have what they need to pass the bill. So it's not dead. It could still happen. They're still working very hard to make it happen. But its features, which are already kind of dim, have gotten darker since McCain pulled out.
But I mean, this is one story that I have not been able to follow very closely. So I don't know like the real details of this bill. But what I have seen is that there is like an incredible backlash to it. The social medias are full of people urging other people to call their senators. They're saying this is like an even more atrocious bill than the last one that was raised. What's so terrible about it?
Well, in terms of like popularity, the numbers are terrible. This is not something you do if you want to do popular legislation. It seems to be
amongst Republicans, even.
Oh yeah, like it's got. I forget the latest poll. It's like polling at 26% overall in terms of favorability. No one likes it. And the whole like, I guess the scheme, the concept behind Graham Cassidy. I mean, it's sort of a variation on the general theme they've been promoting here, but it's not like the skinny repeal. It's not just. It's what it does is it takes a pseudo federalism idea. And it replaces like Obamacare with sort of block grants to states. Now, there's a lot of issues there with what money is going to what states. And some states are getting screwed over and some are benefiting more. But the basic
and Alaska
idea,
is like exempt from this, I read.
Well, Alaska is Murkowski. And she was the one that's. So there's two senators, well, three. On the last go around, the skinny repeal, we had Murkowski and Collins vote no. And then McCain walked in, thumbs down. That was the third no. Right. It was over. McCain's no again. Collins is kind of considered to be unmovable here. She's no still. She's not going to be a yes, supposedly. Murkowski's the one that's seen as like a potential convert. They could get her back on the bus. So what they've offered, or they tried to offer, is to let Alaska keep Obamacare. Because, you know, that's if you're trying so hard to replace Obamacare, then why is your like your sweetener to the deal not replacing it?
Wow. That's kind of crazy. I mean, yeah. I wonder if others could. I mean, like, what about all the blue states who are like, we'd like to keep it, too. Can't we do that? I mean, that would actually be an interesting way to frame it, is that they do repeals in states where they want the repeal and in states they don't. I mean, isn't that possible? I would actually be okay with that in a way, but not really. Because it's still going to kill so many people.
As Alaska governor wrote, it's not an option. You can't keep Obamacare in one state and have it still be a functional system. It doesn't really work overall still.
It requires all the states to participate.
Not all. Like, we could, like, I guess if we wanted to, like, say, Kentucky, you can go screw yourself over. They could leave, but that's not going to happen. Mm.
I saw a lot of noise about Jimmy Kimmel, that he came out with a very strong bit about this. You know, he has a child who's ill. And so apparently there's like the Jimmy Kimmel test. And if it can pass the Jimmy Kimmel test, then he's okay with it. Meaning like, would his child be covered?
Which Cassidy came up with, by the way. That was not him. That was Cassidy himself. The other guy behind Graham Cassidy.
Right. And this one fails it. So he said that he lied to his face.
Cassidy's been lying all over. So Cassidy is himself a doctor. I don't know if he's like just delusional. I think more likely he's lying to himself. But he's been going around claiming that the bill will increase the number of insured. It won't. It can't. That's not how it works. It just can't. And he will not be pinned down to explain how his bill actually improves things. He just kind of goes into buzzwords like it'll give states control and result in efficiencies in the system. Like, okay, how?
Right.
And no one can actually explain how it's going to work this way because in the end of the day, it doesn't improve anything. It just gives a big tax break. What it actually does, aside from these block grants, is it does devolve power in some ways to the states. But for instance, it would make things like pre-existing conditions based on state-based waivers. And if you remember, before Obamacare, before the ACA, I think it was something like 33 states did not have any protections for pre-existing conditions. So there's no reason to think that at least a lot of those won't go back to that if Graham Cassidy were passed.
Right.
Now, for instance, when Pence, Vice President Pence, was on the network TV circuit, he was asked about the plan and if it would protect pre-existing conditions, and he gave a very non-answer.
But with that, can you guarantee that these governors will make sure pre-existing conditions are covered?
Thomas Jefferson said, government that governs least governs best. I mean, the question that people ought to ask is, who do you think will be more responsive to the health care needs in your community? Your governor and your state legislature, or a congressman and a president in a far-off nation's capital?
Right.
I mean, this is the concept of federalism upon which our Constitution was framed. But this legislation, Graham Cassidy, as its authors have said, it contains all the same protections for pre-existing conditions as the president indicated. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have to recognize that Obamacare has failed.
Just by the way, Jefferson never said that. It's a misquote. But for more important issues here, I mean, the way Pence is talking about how it includes protections for pre-existing conditions, I mean, that's only true in the technical sense if you mean that it includes provisions that talk about pre-existing conditions. It just doesn't guarantee protections for them.
Right. It allows protections if
yeah.
the state
It does not prohibit protections for pre-existing conditions.
Which is so generous of them.
Yeah.
But there's also cuts that would impact women disproportionately, right? If I understand correctly. Like, there's like maternity care and other kinds of...
And rolls back Planned Parenthood for a year.
Okay.
It's just the thing is, this whole like mantra they keep repeating of it'll make states like find new ways to be creative and like fix healthcare. Like, okay, but they already have 50 states with like 50 like Medicaids.
Right.
But we have had that kind of diversity for a while. There's not some magical plan the states can come up with to fix everything with less money.
And right now, like all the Medicaid directors across the entire country are against it. 50 Medicaid directors are against
all
it.
All 50.
Hey, Susan, have you had your morning coffee yet?
Not yet.
Are you about to have some coffee? And if so, what coffee are you going to have?
Thankfully, I've got some blue bottle coffee, and I need that right now for this episode.
So here's the truth. The truth is I've never really been a coffee person, except for like a brief blip in my life. I've been a chai person, but then we got some samples of blue bottle coffee, some really delicious samples.
And I'll say, Rabia's chai is legit. It's good.
The chai is good, but this is...
But so is this coffee.
This is some amazing coffee, and they've got some great flavors. Has your husband been drinking it too?
Yes. It comes in bean form, so if you want to do it all the nice ways yourself, you can.
Yeah, you can get a bag of it, or you can get like a separate one. So Blue Bottle has a subscription service, and what they do is, first of all, they work on their end directly with farmers all over the world, and they source the most delicious and sustainable coffee they can find. They roast it within 48 hours. You place your order, they roast it right then, they ship it to your door. So you can order it, you can order them as you like, you can also order a subscription service, and they've got something for everyone's palate. They've got like lighter coffees to really deep chocolatey ones, and I like the deep ones nowadays because it's getting a little bit colder and really warms you up. So right now our listeners can sign up for a free trial of fresh, delicious Blue Bottle Coffee at bluebottlecoffee.com/45, and you've got nothing to lose because it's a free trial. Susan, we already got our free samples, but you know what? Maybe we could sign up for a free trial again. I don't know if we could.
It smells really good.
That might be fraud, but either way, it's worth it. Maybe I'll have my husband sign up for it. That's bluebottlecoffee.com/45. Once again, it's bluebottlecoffee.com/45. Don't miss out on this amazing offer, and you're going to have a great autumn season to drink this delicious coffee in. We are currently in a period of open enrollment, right?
Not yet. They have brought down open enrollment from 90 days under Obama to 45 days. And during those 45 days, they're having the website down for maintenance, like on the weekends or 12-hour stretches.
Every Sunday, healthcare.gov is going to be shut down.
Not every Sunday, but a lot of them. And there's no reason for,
I read that every Sunday in open enrollment, it's going to be shut down from 12 to 12.
Maybe it's all of them. It's a lot of the time. It's going to cut down enrollment by a lot. And also on weekends, it's going to cut it down, which is when people are going to be trying to sign up.
That's a lot of maintenance, man. That's a lot of maintenance.
Website maintenance requires you to shut a website down for 12 hours at a stretch.
Yeah.
On a weekly basis. It looks very much like sabotage. The same way they revoked all the ad funding and all the outreach funding, they're trying to make sure people can't sign up for Obamacare, and that will tank the system overall. They're trying to blow it up.
Well, he has said over and over he wants it to blow up. He's been waiting for it, which, I question the politics of this. What I'm really confused about is I understand that there is an ideological political difference between Republicans and Democrats on the idea of healthcare, on the idea of entitlements, on the idea of what the government owes its citizenry. But at the end of the day, if they enact this bill, it's going to impact red states. It's going to impact Trump. It's going to hurt so many people. I am confused about why they think that when this happens in 2018 or 2020, that's going to be okay for them. They really think there's not going to be any kind of political backlash to this. I mean, there's a part of me, I don't mean this sincerely, but I'm like, what if Democrats were like, okay, fine, go ahead and pass it. Pass it so you can literally commit suicide, political suicide, because I feel like that's what's going to happen here.
I think that they thought, and they could have been right, they'd got through fast, they'd exploded Obamacare fast, they might have gotten away with it, because they were pushing this narrative of, like, Obamacare's already failed, it's already failing, like, it's already gone. And if they could have made it go away quick, it might have worked. At this point, it's really hard for them to get any traction in that narrative because it's been out there so long and they've been so vocally announcing what their plan is that if it does collapse, it'll be like, well, okay, but y'all said you were going to collapse it and you did. So that doesn't seem like Obamacare's fault. I don't see that working at this point. And it's so unpopular what they're trying to do that it's not voters that explain this action. They know that voters hate it.
It's unpopular to some folks, but I read that, you know, there was a donor retreat over the weekend, I think the weekend prior, where there's at least 18 elected officials, and the Koch brothers warned them. They said, listen, if you don't push this agenda out, healthcare and tax reform specifically, we are going to close our piggy banks.
Yes.
So for them, they want this done. And those are some dire threats for
the donors gave a lot of money for tax breaks and they're not getting it. So they're pissed. And that's just really driving it here. Like Senator Grassley said about the healthcare, the current Graham-Cassidy bill, I could give you maybe 10 reasons why this bill shouldn't be considered. But Republicans campaigned on this so often that you have a responsibility to carry out what you said in the campaign.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty much as much of a reason as the substance of the bill. Like, he knows it sucks. They all know it sucks. They know it's just ridiculous and irresponsible. And McCain, who has never been known as a healthcare guy, and, like, as much as he's, you know, cultivated this sometimes undeserved reputation of a maverick, he's never been a maverick in this way. Like, you would not, I mean, if there was like a bill on immigration that was contentious, and like, you might expect to see McCain defect there and cast a maverick vote to side with the Democratic majority. But in healthcare, this is not something you'd ever expect him to do it. I do wonder if, like, he knows for a fact he ain't running again. He knows for a fact that his last, he just got elected 6 years, healthcare issues for himself as well. Like, he knows this is it. And he's not beholden to anyone. And it's not that he even cares about the healthcare bill so much. Like he said, like, I'd probably vote for Graham-Cassidy if it was done in normal order. But he does care about seeing the Senate maintain its reputation of, like, the greatest deliberative body in the world. And that's what's driving him more than anything. It's like, if this is a good bill and it's worth doing, y'all do it right. You can't.
Right.
So
right. And this is also a situation again in which there hasn't been a review done by the CBO, right?
Oh yeah, they're trying to get this through before the CBO comes back. They only have September 30th, which you mentioned. That's like the drop dead date for when they can get this through with 50 votes. Past then, it takes 60, and they're not going to get 60. So this is kind of a current last. It's not going to be the last hurrah, but it's the current last hurrah. And it's worth mentioning, too, this whole Graham-Cassidy thing gets premised on this, like, pseudo-federalism, like I said. But it's not really federalism. It's not about giving states, like, control or power. Like Senator Kennedy said from Louisiana, I want to give us guardrails to the states to say, you cannot use these monies, that is, the monies from the block grants, you cannot use these monies to set up a state-run single-payer system. I don't believe in it. I think it's a mistake. So they want these block grants, is like, you know, promoting states, like doing their own thing, but they don't want to let states do their own thing if it's what they don't like.
Right. Well, we've seen this over and over on other issues too, whether it's marijuana and other things too. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We have between now and September 30th. That's not a lot of time. And in the meantime, I guess we should be making those phone calls, right?
Well, you can.
I'm
in D.C. Who am I going to call?
That's right. You're in D.C. Who are you going to call? You can just pretend you live in Maryland. All right.
That's anti-democratic, and you should never do that. But Rabia, you can call, so you should call for me.
I will do that. I'll call twice. I'll put on your phone. All right. So should we move on?
Yes. You heard the story, Rabia?
Yeah, I did. I did hear this story about the Trump administration and many people attached to it. I mean, these are real regular folks. They're not elitists, you know, but they have to travel in style. The people love that. I guess that's why they voted for them. But yeah, they have a real addiction to private jets, it seems like.
How can you, in the first year of administration, have multiple cabinet members with major waste issues with private jet use? Like, this is clearly a populist regime we've got going on here.
Right.
So there's now several, at least three, although I'd call it two, really.
Tom Price, I heard about this week.
Yeah. Two members of Trump's cabinet that have been caught with using private jets at massive expense to the taxpayer for no goddamn good reason. The first is Price, who is a real son of a bitch for a lot of reasons. If I had to predict someone in the cabinet to do this, it'd probably be Price. And he's Health and Human Services. And he is also from Georgia, but, you know, it happens.
Right. You apologize. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. And he has now been using private jets on over 26 flights at a cost of over $400,000.
26 flights.
Private jet charters.
In like 7 months.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm looking at my notes here, and, you know, I wasn't going to say this, but it kind of says it all. His reasons for doing this are all super bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no good reason for what he's doing here.
Well, he missed a flight once, I heard.
Yes, he missed a flight once. He was trying to fly out to some conference at the Ritz-Carlton in California, and his commercial flight got delayed because of storms. So therefore, from now on, he's taking private charter jets. Although, the storm that blocked his flight that time, it would have grounded private jets too. So it's not like he's getting there any faster on a private jet.
Right.
Just, you know, at a lot more expense to the taxpayer.
Did he also fly from D.C. to Philly? Or it was like a really short trip?
Oh, yeah. He's taking his little, like, hoppers. Like,
that doesn't even make sense.
Someone did a price comparison of his recent trip to Philly. The 135-mile trip would have cost about $92 if Price had traveled by car, $544 in Amtrak, or about $725 on a commercial flight. The private jet Price took instead cost $25,000, according to the joint analysis. Wait, $725 for a commercial flight to Philly? Come on.
Okay, I was going to say $544 is way too much for Amtrak. I know you can do it for cheaper. So
even getting the benefit of the doubt there, like,
yeah,
you could have done 50 different trips for the price of one of those jets.
You can book. I mean, D.C. is, first of all, full of private car services, like really nice private. We're talking about limo services.
Well, you could have booked
a limo service. You could Uber it. But if you really wanted to go in style, you could get a limo service for a few hundred bucks, probably. Philly is right down the street. I mean, it's not far. It's like 2 hours away.
So, yeah, Price is, and he also, even after this was first brought up, he still kept doing it. And he's now said that he's going to suspend doing it pending review, which, sure, yay, you stopped doing this bad thing when you were caught, finally. His explanations for, like, why it's not a big deal have tended towards the disingenuous, I think. He said, for instance, that these criticisms of his private jet flights are politically motivated. He said, remember, but there are folks who want to see this president fail. There are folks who want to see this administration fail. That is part of the stream. We are swimming upstream against that kind of current. But that's not dissuading us at all.
These poor underdogs.
Yeah. Wait, like, why do they hate, like, waterways? Like, the stream, the swamp. Like, all the bad things are calling. Like streams and swamps are good things.
They're good things, yeah.
It just shows what the Trump effect is having. The idea that government officials think that they can come in and, like CEOs of a big corporation, right, start expensing all kinds of shit. That's not how it works in the government.
Well, when you bring in people into cabinet positions who are actually used to living certain lifestyles, I mean, that's what also he's doing. He's restocking the swamp with a lot of corporate America. So, you know, but my thing is this. I mean, if they're coming in as people who are already filthy rich from corporate America, can't they just, like, charter their own jets? Do they have to use our taxpayer dollars for that?
And you know, that's what used to happen too. There have been rich people before, obviously, in the cabinet, and Obama's had plenty of rich people in his cabinet as well. And they would, if they usually took government, like regular flights. Like, I remember the quote from one of them, like, they always flew, can't remember what it was now, one of the airlines has like a government discount, so they flew that. But when there was like critical meetings, they'd pay for their own damn flights.
Right. And then you had Biden, who took the train to Philly back, I mean, every week.
Yeah. If it's good enough for the vice president. Yeah. Okay. There's also DeVos. That's education. And she has a lot of issues of her own. But she's also kind of been grouped in this like grouping of cat members that take private flights. It is different from her. She's a billionaire. She has her own private jet, and she flies that around to various events at her own expense.
Yeah. So. It's her own jet. I don't care what she does with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's issues with having so many billionaires with your own private jets on the cabinet.
Right.
But I'm not going to criticize her for that. I mean, you got a private jet, use it. I would. There's nothing wrong with that.
One day, maybe we could go in together on a private jet, Susan, in about 10 years.
If I have a private jet ever, Rabia, you're welcome on it anytime.
Awesome. Likewise.
But there's another very rich person in the cabinet who has not taken DeVos's lead and is not using their own private jet, but trying to use America's jets. And that's Mnuchin. He's Treasury. And for a guy that looked, I'm not paying attention either, really, I guess, before now. But he didn't seem to have much of a history, like much of like a scandal history going on before he came into the government.
Right.
But he is racking it up now.
Him and his wife.
Both. Yeah. And he has also been caught. Well, first of all, like this first came out for the eclipse. Do you hear the story?
I vaguely remember it, that him and his wife took did they take Air Force One, or they took some government flight to watch the eclipse?
Yeah. So, he, coincidentally, at the time of the eclipse, Mnuchin had this speech to give in Kentucky, and they took a government jet, and you know, that cost a lot. And they just happened to stop at Fort Knox, and they watched the solar eclipse on top of $200 billion worth of gold. Yeah, I mean, the analogies are pretty spot on.
It's pretty amazing.
And so now that's being investigated, because that was happened to be like right in the perfect spot of the eclipse to watch it. So now they're investigating why the trip happened and what the reason for the trip was. And like, if it was a coincidence that that's what happened there.
But here's my question. So they investigate it. They say, we have determined that you planned this trip on purpose. It was just so you could watch the eclipse on top of billions of dollars of gold. What's the worst that could happen? He has to pay back the expense that he
No, that's like criminal. That's a big issue.
Is it? Okay.
That's fraud, waste. Like, no, that'd be a big deal. I mean, they're probably, unless he wrote an email that said, I'm going to invent a fake speech to give up in Kentucky so I can go watch the clips on Fort Knox with my wife. I mean, I doubt he'd get caught for it. But, you know, these people are so bright that maybe he did it.
Maybe there's WhatsApp messages between him and his wife.
They're probably like, G-chatting, honey. Like, honey, I got an idea.
Right.
Of course, his wife is the Scottish, I guess she's an actress. I don't want to call her an actress. What has she been in?
Honestly, I don't even know.
She's always called Scottish actress Louise Linton, but has she actually been in anything?
I wouldn't know. Maybe she's been in stuff from Scotland, but I have no idea.
So I guess allegedly she is an actress and they just got married.
She seems like she's used to living the good life.
Yeah. I just looked it up. She has been in, and this is really important, so we need to know this. She's been in a movie called Lions for Lambs, The Echo, The Intruder, Crew to Crew, 5 Hours South.
What the hell is that?
These all look really amazing. Serial Daters Anonymous. That's Rules Don't Apply.
Critically acclaimed, I'm sure, titles all.
Rules Don't Apply sounds very fitting. And The Intruder. Yeah, they all look really fabulous. Anyway.
I'm going to check out Netflix to see what the offerings are.
I actually might watch one now just because.
I know. I have to, too.
The YouTube like preview clips are interesting. That's all I'll say. Anyway, she also has the hashtag dedicated to her Linton lies because of her ridiculous biography she wrote about her gap year in Africa. Have you heard the story?
I've heard of it. I don't know the details of it, though. So she spent a gap year in Africa or did not spend a gap year in Africa?
Linton did. I don't know what year this was, like 2002 or 19, somewhere around there. She spent her gap year between high school and college in Zambia. Sort of, you know, volunteering and helping out.
Are you sure it wasn't Nambia? Because,
you know, I get them confused all the time. I think Nambia must be somewhere else.
Probably. It's like,
for the record, that's what Trump said in a speech.
Yeah, to African leaders.
Yeah, he's like, oh, repeatedly. My friends get so rich in Africa, like in Namibia.
Yeah, no, it's not a place, people. It does not exist. But anyhow, go on, sir.
Yeah. And her memoir or whatever talked about all the struggles she suffered there and like the horrifying night she spent hiding from rebels across the border.
You are lying. You're because kidding. Like of her. It's a lie. It was all a lie.
Oh, yeah. Like that was not going on. Just there was a war and there was Congolese war going on at the time. But like it was not crossing the border into Zambia. She was never, she and her angel hair, as she put it, were never in danger. And all like the account, like she had all these details that were like not accurate based on like the geography of the region or like the culture of the region. It was just a totally like, yeah,
it's incredible.
Like a white lady goes to Africa and saves everyone narrative with no base in reality.
She probably never left the Hilton.
I mean, she was staying like some lodge down there. I mean, she probably just had a normal gap year like everyone else.
Right.
Anyway, that's who Lytton is. And then she decided to go on Instagram and write about it. She had a picture of her walking off of like Air Force One and she tagged all of her designer clothes in it.
Right.
I know they were, but
that was really tasteful. I remember that.
Yeah. And someone called her out for it and she wrote back, "Aw, did you think this was a personal trip? Adorable. Did you think the U.S. government paid for our honeymoon or personal travel? Lol, lol, lol. Have you given more to the economy than me or my husband? Either as an individual earner in taxes or in self-sacrifice to your country? I'm pretty sure we paid more sacrifices towards our day trip than you did."
Wow. Well, you know, I have to say this. In the face of this, I have to say Melania comes across as very, very dignified.
Mm-hmm. Melania wants no part of this shit.
Yeah, I think so. In fact, she it's at the point where it's like almost like Trump doesn't even realize she's around. Do you see that clip?
Yeah.
He's like, Melania wishes she could be here. And Melania's like standing there like in a baseball hat and a button down shirt. Like, I'm right next to you. You don't realize.
Yeah. And Melania is just trying to stay out of view. Which was that thing from Louise Lytton was kind of ironic because it came out later that, in fact, Mnuchin had tried to ask to use U.S. government aircraft for his honeymoon.
Nice.
The request was denied, but he made the request, and that's being investigated as well.
Did he say why he needed that plane for his honeymoon? Just for the heck of it, because it'd be cool? Or did he have any...
National security.
Oh, for national security.
Because, you know, if like something goes on...
ISIS is coming after him.
Let's call the Secretary of the Treasury.
Right.
Like, something bad's going down. We really need to have, like, DOD, DOJ, and Treasury.
And Treasury on the call. Well, that's how all those mega blockbuster summer films, you know, end up being saved, is the Secretary of Treasury comes in and saves the day.
Yeah, Louise Lytton's got a star in them. She's going to write her memoirs of, like, surviving from ISIS while on U.S. government craft on her honeymoon.
I have a feeling, you know, her career might, you never know. I mean, once she's out of government, or her husband's out of government, which is going to happen at some point, maybe she'll relaunch in Hollywood. That'll be fun to see in Sharknado 12 or something.
If she can join, which one is it? One of the daughters-in-law of Trump on the state TV network they've got going on.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Anyway, here's Mnuchin responding to criticisms about his plane use.
Well, let me say that the Inspector General is reviewing my travel. I look forward to that review. I'm comfortable, and we've had our legal counsel review everything, but if there's suggestions, we'll follow it. That's number one. Number two, it doesn't cost $25,000 an hour, but it costs a lot of money. And number three, as I've said, there are times when I need secure communications to be in touch with the President, the National Security Council, and that's the reason why.
Can you remember anything specific from that day, why you would have needed to be in touch with them on that airplane?
Absolutely.
And the Pentagon gave us those figures, by the way, of 25,000.
Again, you can check with the Pentagon because that's not what they charge. Okay, but what I would say, it's not the point. They charge a lot of money. I had a secure call that day that was critical and set up and needed to be done at that time, and that's why I used the plane.
And I think I really like this clip because of how Mnuchin felt the need to like correct the fact that the number that the anchor gave $25,000 an hour was off in some way. Like, he acknowledges it's irrelevant. He acknowledges it still cost a lot, but he felt it was really important to make point two, that number you gave was wrong. It still cost a shit ton, but that number was not the exact accurate number.
It's really $22,000 an hour.
Yeah, or probably like $27,000, probably more.
Maybe it's more.
He's like, actually, the number was wrong, is all I'm going to say. Basically, he happened to have a phone call he wanted to make, so he wanted to pay $25,000 an hour to take a... And again, like, this guy came from Wall Street. He came from, like, finance. Like, he's used to spending lots of money for his travel and expensing it to the company.
I mean, do they not have secure cell phones? Don't they have, like, secure phones that are given to them? Why do they have to be on a jet?
On a plane.
On a plane.
I think he didn't want to change his flight. He wanted to make sure his flight was Yeah. He didn't think to schedule his call around his flight.
This is what I call the fleecing of America. You know, yeah. our taxpayer dollars are being really, really wasted here. So we have a new sponsor this week, which I'm pretty excited about, and their name is DaVinci. Have you heard of DaVinci before?
I haven't.
What this is DaVinci is a company that has something called DaVinci Meeting Rooms, and they have 5,000 meeting rooms in different locations all across the country. You know, we tend to like get together over Skype and have all these, you know, meetings online and stuff, but there's a lot of business you can't conduct without having a face-to-face meeting, and it's really important. So what DaVinci does is, if you can't afford to have like a permanent conference room, they give you an affordable space that you can use. And so what you do is you go online and you book your room, you just search book, and then you can meet up. They start at $10 an hour. Startups and Fortune 500 companies are all using this. It comes fully staffed, and the meeting rooms have, like, you know, high-speed internet. It can be used as a boardroom, a training space. I mean, it's kind of remarkable.
If I'd known about DaVinci, my life would have been a lot easier, especially for Undisclosed or their podcasts, because we meet with witnesses a lot, and you can't go to a coffee shop, can't record there. And trying to find a place where you can actually meet face-to-face and record without the public being all around you is very difficult. God knows I've gone some creative places trying to talk to witnesses for the podcast. But with DaVinci, that would be a lot easier.
That's a great point. I mean, like, meeting witnesses. But, you know, like, if you are somebody who has a startup business and you just can't afford the space right now, but you still need to put on a polished front for your clients or potential clients, you know, book a DaVinci meeting room. And it's interesting, me and a couple of my friends who are also colleagues are right now in the process of trying to figure out, like, we might be starting up our own practice, our own legal practice next year. And so we've been looking at different options in terms of, like, you know, like offices and this and that. And we've been thinking about finding like a temporary office space, a conference type of space. And this is perfect. So I'm definitely going to let them know about this. And I'm so excited about it. And our listeners can actually book their space at DaVinciMeeting.com/45 and get the first hour for free. So Susan, your next witness does not have to be interviewed at a front porch.
I will just say I have been to meeting rooms in sort of city hall planning centers, or like their parks and rec centers. They don't work out so great. DaVinci would be way better.
People playing basketball in the corner or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, now you don't have
to
do that.
You're joking, but it's been like that.
You don't have to do that anymore, because now we've got DaVinciMeeting.com/45. Get your first hour free. Terms and conditions do apply. So for details, just go to DaVinciMeeting.com/45. Where are you holding your meeting next? We've already talked before about the Secret Service detail, how much that's been costing us because Trump's family's all over the place, because Trump won't stop going to his properties. I think he's visited his properties like nearing almost like close to 100 times since he's taken the office. This administration is going to cost us way more than any past administration. It might have already done that. And when you take that and you balance it against like the kinds of things they say, where they want to save money on healthcare and they want to do other, I mean, it's pretty astonishing. But I am again and again just astonished at the fact that his supporters don't see this. Like, it doesn't register to them. They don't care. Yeah, why do they not care? If you guys are listening, tell us, please tweet at me.
They don't care because they've heard for 8 years how this Muslim born in Africa, born in Kenya, is president. And compared to that, nothing Trump's doing is that bad.
Nothing's that bad.
I mean, yeah, they've heard all kinds of terrible, horrible things that Obama did, and they believed it.
Yeah.
So their bar is so low that Trump's able to get over it.
That's true, I guess. All right.
But, oh, speaking of Secret Service, did you see how there's now two people fewer being watched?
That's right. I did hear a couple folks lost their Secret Service.
Not lost. They turned it down for privacy reasons.
Oh, that's right. Don Jr.
And, oh my God, I'm blanking on her name.
Oh, Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah, she also, I don't know why she had it in the first place.
I didn't know that either, yeah.
But she's also declined it. So they are now no longer watching Secret Service.
Why did Don Jr. have it? He's also not part of the government.
He's the child of the president.
He's an adult child. All the adult children.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, in a normal administration, like, the worst thing that happened is someone kidnaps the president's kid.
Okay.
And the president can't be expected to be reasonable. Like, what happens then?
Right.
Like, the president's going to not sacrifice his kid for something like that.
So for example, Chelsea Clinton, to this day, would she still have it? I didn't know that the adult children of
I don't know presidents. If she does still. Ex-presidents can still have it. They usually do.
Yeah.
I don't think she would.
Well, it's interesting. So Don Jr.'s like, no, thank you. I don't want you watching me where
he
I'm going.
He wants privacy. You're like, huh, what kind of meetings are you trying to go to? that it's better not to have the government tailing you for.
Well, I mean, remember early on when Trump took office, he was very not trusting of Secret Service. He wanted his own private detail, and I think he had it and maybe still has it. So these folks don't really trust. Maybe they think they're also like deep state Obama hangovers, well, or whatever.
They've also used Secret Service. Like, it's like, if this meeting was so bad, why would Secret Service allow it?
That makes no sense.
It doesn't, but also that, yeah, that's not what their job is. Anyway.
Thanks for saving us some money, though, Don.
Yeah, appreciate it.
The United Nations General Assembly happened this week in New York. It's always a very big, busy week when this happens. The leaders of the world address the other leaders of the world. And it was much anticipated to hear Trump's first speech, his very first speech ever to the UN. Now, I was traveling when this was happening, so I was catching bits and pieces, horrified of it. There was that one big soundbite that everybody kind of focused on, and we're going to get to that about North Korea. But I thought it was, I was actually pretty mortified when I finally read the Texas speech that, you know, the way Trump actually started out his speech, it was like another campaign speech, because he starts out by saying, "Fortunately, the U.S. has done very well since Election Day last November 8th. And he goes on to talk about stock market being at an all-time high. It's a record. Unemployment's at its lowest. Companies are moving back. We're spending almost $700 billion on military defense, and we're going to be the strongest it's ever been. And blah, blah, blah." And he's saying, you know, since November 8th, you know, my election has just really turned the United States around. Because before that, you know, nobody at that General Assembly really thought of the United States as like a world leader, I suppose. That's kind of embarrassing. First of all, I think it's kind of inappropriate in a space like that, because that's not what they're gathered to do. They're not there. They're not like your potential voters. But it's always a popularity contest for this man. Then the speech took a pretty dark turn, which is actually kind of common. We saw that also when he did the State of the Union this year. And, you know, I don't know if anybody's actually found out who wrote this speech. Apparently Gorka, who is, you know, remember Seb Gorka, he's—
Wait, Gorka was involved? I didn't hear this.
Well, no, Gorka is not saying that he's involved, but Gorka, after the speech, said that he knows for sure that Bannon was involved in writing the speech, but the White House says that's not true. I think Miller's sticky little fingerprints are all over this, because it just sounds like they are. And so anyhow, Trump goes on to say things like, you know, "Terrorist extremists have gathered strength and spread to every region of the planet. Rogue regimes represented in this body not only support terror, but threaten other nations and their own people with the most destructive weapons known to humanity. Authority and authoritarian powers seek to collapse the values of systems and alliances that prevented conflict and tilted the world toward freedom since World War II. First of all, I know he can't put all those words together himself. Second of all, he's talking about authority and authoritarian powers. This past week, it was revealed that he called Erdogan. He had a conversation with Erdogan, who is the premier of Turkey, and he was in this country, you know, earlier this year when his bodyguards attacked protesters outside the White House. And they did it again this past week. And Trump called him and apologized.
So, okay, that's what Erdogan's saying. I mean, the fact we can't be sure, like, in any past history ever in my lifetime, it would have been instantly known that that foreign dictator was lying. This time around, we're like, okay, well, maybe actually that did happen. The White House says Trump didn't say that. But I don't think that settles the matter.
I think Trump has clearly shown a lot of admiration for strong men like Erdogan and others. So,
but officially they're denying he said it. I don't know if I can believe that.
You know what? Somebody's going to produce the receipts. You know, somebody's going to recording of that. But, you know, Erdogan is smart, maybe not to challenge it. You know, he wants to maintain this this relationship. Anyhow, so Trump goes on to talk about international criminal networks and mass migration. And then he spent a lot of time. I think the word sovereign was brought up dozens of times. He talked a lot about national sovereignty, which is, you know, basically he's talking about America first. He's talking about every nation first. But he says things like, you know, strong sovereign nations let diverse countries with different values, different cultures, and different dreams not just coexist, but work side by side on the basis of mutual respect. Strong sovereign nations let their people take ownership of the future. Anyhow, he talks about sovereignty over and over and over. He also said, "We must protect our nations, their interests, and their futures. We must reject threats to sovereignty from the Ukraine to the South China Sea." And I thought that was interesting, because he doesn't mention Russia once in the speech. But that might have been the closest.
Yeah, that has to be a reference. But it didn't actually specify what the issue is there. Like, is the issue of like Crimea's sovereignty and its right to choose its future. Is that what's in, like, you could read it either way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it was carefully drafted so it could be read either way, but not insult Putin. And
but those were all Putin arguments he was making. This whole idea of us being like, must be embrace patriotism in individual countries. Like, it's embracing this world order based on state interest rather than this sort of like shared ideals of not murdering people.
Well, his ideologues, they reject like globalism. They reject these kinds of things. And they
want a national system where it's that's not the point of the UN. Like, the idea of the UN is that we are sovereign nations, but we can coexist peacefully with cooperation and communication.
Cooperation. Right. Well, you know, I was happy that he did not disparage the UN, because he has many times in the past done that. And I really thought, well, he's going to take this opportunity to really tear them a new one. And he wasn't. He was pretty respectful, actually, to the UN. He did say that Iran was an embarrassment to the U.S. He talked about Iran for a bit. He called Tehran an economically depleted rogue state. And the delegation from Iran, you know, like the camera panned on them for quite a while as they put on and remove their glasses and pretend to ignore him on their phones or whatever. It is officially fall. The first day of autumn just passed us and temperatures are dropping. And I love, love, love this season. It is my favorite season because I love getting cozy. I'm all about cozy layers, especially in the bedroom, which is one place, by the way, I have a lot of trouble relaxing because I have had sleep issues and insomnia for many, many years. But I've got some amazing new bedding now that is helping all that go away. Crane and Canopy. Crane and Canopy is an online bedding brand that's on a mission to give people the most blissful night's sleep with their luxurious collection of beautiful bedding, duvet covers, and sheets. They are beautifully designed. They have an in-house design team, and it combines chic, modern style with really beautiful fine details. And their bedding includes the season's freshest colors and patterns, so you are sure to find the bedding you love. This is the perfect time to gift yourself some new bedding, and it's luxurious. It's made of the finest extra long staple cotton. In fact, their team spent over 18 months looking for the perfect weave and thread count, all to ensure ultimate softness, comfort, and luxury. These things feel like clouds. And Crane and Canopy makes shopping for bedding easier than ever. Their website is beautiful, it's easy to use, they offer free returns, and they have an on-call customer service team to answer all of your design questions. So, to help you achieve your best night's sleep, Crane and Canopy is offering 10% off your next bedding purchase for all our listeners. All you gotta do is head over to craneandcanopy.com/45th. Again, it's craneandcanopy.com/45th and use the code 45th at checkout to get 10% off. That's crane, C-R-A-N-E, and canopy.com/45th and use the code 45th for 10% off.
Now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict. No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able. But hopefully, this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about.
Yeah, that was kind of, and apparently, so, you know, cameras caught John Kelly at that moment, just kind of leaning over in his chair, just holding his head.
But see, at this point, I kind of got his listening face.
Oh, you think that's what it is? It could be.
It could also now be his listening face. He constantly feels that way. But it seems like that's just how he listens, is he looks like he's like despairing and judging everything around him.
Well, I guess, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I would have to see other moments in the speech. I mean, if that was the only time he did that, then I would think maybe it's a reaction to it. But yeah, at the same time, he's smart enough. He knows now people are watching his reactions.
True. And also, apparently that was improvised when Trump decided to bring out the Rocket Man thing.
He loves that. He loves Rocket Man. I remember you mentioned earlier, and I think this is true. For any little boy who's got dreams of outer space, I think that's a cute little nickname. It's not that scary.
Well, he has now updated it when he tweeted last night. Just heard Foreign Minister of North Korea speak at UN. If he echoes the thoughts of little Rocket Man, they won't be around much longer.
He added little. Now, that's really going to piss him off. But he already did piss him off.
He just threatened to destroy 25 million people because of a speech. Yeah. And also nuclear war.
A lot of people have reported that tweet because, Trump makes these threats of violence, of annihilation. And Twitter's like, oh, well, so much for our policies. Kim Jong-un did respond to the UN speech. And I thought this was other than being terrifying, it's also I thought it was funny because he slammed Trump as mentally deranged and said the American president had, quote, made the most ferocious declaration of a war in history, and I will make the man holding the prerogative of the supreme command in the U.S. pay dearly for his speech. And he also added, whatever Trump might have expected, he will face results beyond his expectation. These guys, man, they love
Did you see the nicknames they came up with? Oh, my God. They were so bad.
I had to look this one up. He said, I will surely and definitely tame the mentally deranged U.S. dotard with fire. I'm not lying. I had to look up dotard. I didn't know what that was.
That was the translation.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. The Korean was something like old bastard or something like that, which, works.
The translation was also like batty old man or something like that.
Yeah. And then the foreign minister has been calling Trump. Let's see what they were. He called him President Evil.
Sorry.
Commander in Grief. And the Lion King, as in L-Y-I-N.
This is amazing.
If it was a seventh grade shouting match, I would give full credit.
Yeah. I wonder if they actually have people dedicated to coming up with these names. Or they're
that
just
must be a really good job to have North Korea.
That would be, yeah. That probably. I mean, as long as Trump's in, actually, I guess it wouldn't matter. Whoever happens to be commander of U.S. forces was probably keep that person employed.
Yeah. It's funny, we're laughing, but at the same time, this is how nuclear war starts.
Right.
It's not going to happen because of this exchange of insults, but Trump is heightening the tension. Trump is proving he is impulsive, irrational. He makes it very plausible to think that he might suddenly attack out of nowhere. And all it takes is some kind of signal gets misread by North Korea. If they have to make a snap judgment, is this attack or is it not an attack? They're going to start to err more and more on the side of it is an attack. And whether it is or not, they're going to retaliate the only way they have, which is nuclear war.
I wonder if Trump thought that by threatening to completely annihilate North Korea in front of the UN, he thought, now that will give this body the incentive it needs to do something about North Korea. It almost seemed like it, the way he ended his remarks after saying that he's going to completely destroy them, was he's like, okay, now, he feels like, either that or it's that he really is itching. He's really itching to use nukes.
And or I think he just thinks that, we can win. He thinks that it's a simple matter of we're the biggest and baddest and it's not a big deal. We can just win if we want to. And the only reason we're not winning is we happen to be nice today. He thinks missile defense works.
Mm, maybe that's it. Or maybe he thinks, there's a certain number of American casualties that he'd be fine with as long as he's not included in them.
And he's totally okay with there being lots of Japanese and South Korean casualties.
Being killed. Yep. South Korea is not exactly happy with this stuff. Obviously, they're the ones that
this
great,
is bad.
Great danger.
This is not a matter of tomorrow it's going to be nuclear war. But it means the odds of that happening have gone way above zero. And it's scary. We didn't learn until I think it was decades or years at least after the Cold War, we almost all died in nuclear hellfire. We didn't because one person decided, this isn't really an attack. And Russia, he died actually this year. He was in charge that night and he saw the attack come in and realized, no, that's not a real attack. I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to wait and see.
Wow.
And it wasn't. It was a mistake in their software. But if he'd chosen the way around, Russia would have responded and that'd be that.
In this situation, Trump, we have experienced, obviously, military command that, I think would be able to prevent something really impulsive by Trump in terms of move. But really, it's the rhetoric that could.
They can't stop it. If he says fire, they can't stop it.
Is that right? Really?
Yeah. If he says fire, it's done. They cannot stop it. There's no one to block it. There's no one to stop it. If he says fire, it will fire.
They could rebel.
No, they won't. Not doing. The whole system's designed to do it. The only halt in the system is to make sure it's really the president saying it. That's the only thing they have to verify. If that's verified, then you go ahead. There's no verification that the president's not insane. No verification the president's doing the right thing. It's purely
the president. There you go. I think he is insane.
It doesn't matter. He could be like actually actively psychotic and everyone knows it. And if it's the president, it doesn't matter.
That's troubling. But I still would hope in a situation like that, that they would say, we are just screwing over chain of command. This is not
happening.
They can't.
That's not how it's done. Like, there's no way for that to happen. The whole system's designed to prevent that from happening.
It is. Systems get disrupted. Revolt.
Anyway. It's a scary time. It's been scary for a while, and it's going to be scary for a while yet.
Yeah. If they just want to exchange barbs, like, on social media and keep it to that, I feel like I want to just put these two men in, like, their own little private chat room, and they can call each other all the names they want, get out of their system. Two crazy men with terrible hair.
It used to be, like, the direct line. And for Russia, they had, like, the red line where they could, like, call each other. Let's give Kim and Trump a direct Twitter, like a Twitter DM exchange where they can just like yell it out over Twitter and like not do anything else.
It's not as fun though if nobody else can see it. That's true. For them both. Yeah, that's probably the
problem. Who's going to see all their witty nicknames?
Exactly. All right. So thanks so much for the rundown this week, Susan. It has been another week of mayhem, and we'll be back in a week, and then we're going to talk all about son of bitches and son. Is it sons of a bitch or son of a bitches? Which would it be? It would be sons of a bitch.
We'll discuss.
Right? We'll discuss. We'll discuss the correct grammatical way to talk about all this.
And we'll also see what's going on in the Ukraine lately. Not with Russia, but with Manafort.
Good. It's been a while since we caught up on that. And I know there's been a lot of activity around Manafort. Manafort's toast is what I'm hearing. He's toast. All right. Thanks so much, guys. See you next week.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible, and I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products, and thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com, and guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.